I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show.
Disasters, and eventually
the end of the world. Are you serious? Listeners, lose your egos. Give up your possessions. Give them all to me. If you do, I promise I will do nothing but sit around giggling all day long, and that's enlightenment. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. Jody Radzik from the website Guruphiliac will be with us in a little while. In fact, he's here right now just hanging out. So he'll participate perhaps in our opening discussion. And Jeff Deal is here as usual. And of course, the great science fiction writer John Shirley is our guest host. His new book is Living Shadows, Stories New and Pre-Owned. And I just got one copy in the mail, and then he brought another copy over. So double your pleasure.
You can give that one to me, are you?
Welcome, John.
All right, thanks. Black mask protesters in Portland, Oregon have been burning images of U.S. soldiers in effigy. And everybody's a bit baffled by this. I mean, who will burn soldiers in effigy in the anti-war movement?
Yeah,
everybody knows that it really is going to work against the whole movement to do that. Now, which anti-war protest group wants to create the impression they believe U.S. soldiers are responsible for this misguided war? Which anti-war group would really like to turn most Americans against anti-war groups by burning soldiers in effigy? The probable answer is none. COINTELPRO and other federal agents provocateur have infiltrated activist groups in the past. You remember from...
Sure.
I don't know if you're old enough to remember the...
I am old enough. I was part of the movement in the 60s as a high schooler.
And the FBI used agents provocateur.
Absolutely.
And it's been exposed in Congress. It's not a conspiracy theory. It was testified about.
There have been cases recently where it's been exposed.
Yeah, like peace movements and stuff been infiltrated by...
That's the point. There are indications that environmental groups, too, have been infiltrated by agents posing as extremists, environmental extremists. Could these black mask protesters also be government agents trying to rally support for the war by turning America against protesters?
I say that because usually the black mask thing is associated with the group the Black Bloc, who are some really hardcore anarchists, but that doesn't sound like something they would do. They wouldn't go after the soldiers.
They wouldn't. And if you were an agent, you know that if you're going to put on a mask, nobody's going to walk up to you and say, "Are you a black mask?" Because the whole point is to be anonymous out there on the streets. So that anonymity can work against the original anarchist groups. If agents are adopting it too. I had a friend recently said he's seen this firsthand. He said, "I've been to meetings where people were obviously there to screw things up, and this was about getting the already legislated funding for cleaning up nuclear waste dumps. Doesn't seem that controversial. And when I first joined this group, I thought people were being paranoid about things like this. But then I saw it for myself."
I remember being at a thing, a 20th anniversary of Summer of Love, big, like, fest with all the counterculture people speaking at it, and there was this couple there, and they, what about the revolution, and, when are we going to bring back the weathermen, and blah, 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 and they were so corny. It was like, you guys are really stupid, or you're really obvious. They were, like, too obvious to be provocative.
They were out of it.
How could they think they were going to be able to pull it off without a little training?
Well, maybe they just never gave it up, Maybe you're the one that's out of touch.
I'm out of touch,
sold
man.
Out.
They were right on.
But, let's imagine an ideology or at least a logical train that would allow somebody to actually be against the troops, to blame that kind of thing on the troops to the point where they're so angry that they... Because it is an all-volunteer army, military, right? If everybody just chose not to join it, then...
It's the universe, soldier.
Is there isn't part of our willingness to be warriors as a society to go out and kill people on orders that we don't have any choosing of. We have no control over politics of it. Yeah, we just go and we pull the trigger.
There's a punk element to it. You know, it's punk to burn the effigies of the soldiers in the war, and it's also kind of punk to go to Iraq with an AR-15 and shoot people.
There's a flavor sometimes of those things, but I personally doubt if anybody but somebody trying to screw up the anti-war movement burned an effigy of a U.S. soldier.
I mean, there are a lot of people out there who these days are just like whacked out. Like,
well, Fred Phelps, the right. God Hates Fags guys. I just saw a piece on him. He actually goes out and he yells at, blames it on soldiers. He calls all of them.
He goes to their funerals.
Goes to soldiers' funerals and
he's
says,
protesting that
we're all going to burn as
he's
as Americans.
A lunatic,
because,
yeah. And he attracts lunatics and they're relatively tiny.
There's nobody. He doesn't have a movement. It's just his family. It's like six or seven.
Yeah, and it's like 20 people around them, and that's about it.
Yeah.
I think, I think there's a pretty good chance that what you're talking about is, you know, I would bet more on the provocateur angle.
It's not going to serve the interest of a movement that has its own existence.
But I mean, there's a lot of actions that don't serve the existence of the movement per se, if it's going to be a popular movement, that are sort of irresistible.
Any kind of violent protest.
I mean, there is this urge people to they're just expressing themselves. They don't really care whether it's intelligent.
The majority of the anti-war protest organizers believe in supporting the troops.
Sure.
And they will have yellow ribbons and they'll say, we support the troops. We want them to get what they need. We want them to get more armor if they have to stay there. And they will send supplies to the troops that they're not getting and so on.
Yeah.
And to show that it's not about them, that it's not about the troops. Now, it is an all-volunteer army, but a lot of people volunteered not believing that they would be in a war, just that they would be a kind of deterrent.
There has to be some accountability for that choice to go join the American military. I remember when I was a teenager, just graduating high school, and some of my friends were considering joining the military. And, you know, I was kind of into the punk rock thing, and I was like, what? How can you even think of joining the military? They're going to give you orders. You're going to have to obey orders. Yeah. What are you thinking?
Well, there's no sin in being... You were a fringe person, let's face it.
Yeah.
And there's no sin in being part of the mainstream. It doesn't mean that you're a...
That's different from taking orders.
A sucker for being part of that. And the mainstream
has
a consensus attitude that the military is here for this purpose and we can trust them. And it is gullible... But I don't know if it's really that irresponsible to trust people when all your life you're told to trust them.
And they market it like an extreme sport.
And they
They're literally
like
marketing
sport.
Joining the army as if it was an extreme sport. You
Very
get the
true.
Cool glasses, you have the cool gear, and you go out there and kick ass.
When the beam of light is broken by a solid object, such as this head, the electric eye control opens the faucet, and there is your drink.
Jody Radzik is the editor and author of Guruphiliac, a site dedicated to revealing self-aggrandizement and superstition in self-realization. In other words, he holds gurus up to scrutiny and criticism and indeed, in fact, ridicule. So how did you become obsessed with gurus and their clay feet?
I've been interested in Vedanta philosophy and Hindu-based spirituality since about 1983, and I just kind of stayed with that for a long time over the years. Went to school at John F. Kennedy University, got into their interdisciplinary consciousness studies program, didn't quite finish, but stayed with the particular types of Hinduism I was interested in. Got to a certain point where I was able to frame it all in the context of the truths espoused by Vedanta in the Upanishads, which are kind of the epitome of Hinduism, in my opinion, and also the philosophy that most New Age ideologies pay lip service to. But that's really all they're doing. They're not really looking at the truths and what they say. They're just kind of paying lip service to it because it justifies whatever bullshit they're subscribing to. So when I was able to frame the whole thing in a way that made sense to me, suddenly it became clear that there was so much BS out there that was paying lip service to, but not really able to withstand the critique that Vedanta provides. And it basically pissed me off because I believed all that crap. I grew, what kind of came up believing all the, you know, ridiculous, uncritical notions about spirituality that people hold.
So, I mean, did you have a guru at some point? Or did
no,
you,
I have a guru
you...
right now. I actually have a, you know, there are two people in my life that I would say were, well, there's one person who's a formal guru who I've taken initiation from in the lineage of Ramakrishna, who is a really interesting guru, a very interesting character. And, of course, not spotless and pure. There's, you know, he's got a whole interesting hidden backstory that the devotees don't want you to know about. Finding out that story about him was really formative for me and kind of helped me come to the critique that I have now. So I had that guru. I took initiation from him and I did that meditation. And I still do that meditation. He's still my guru.
What does that mean to you? I mean, guru is teacher. Guru would be an
enlightened. It means a lot of different things.
Would it be an enlightened person? Is there such a thing as an enlightened person?
I think so. But what enlightenment is and what people expect enlightenment is and what they think enlightenment is are two totally different things. I believe my guru knows what he's talking about experientially. He's from India and he has some language difficulty. Mm-hmm. I wanted a guru that would expound to me, that would let me debate with him, that would, you know, get into the minutia and discuss things in the context of Western culture. He wouldn't do any of that. All he cared about is, am I doing my meditation? Am I paying my bills? Those are the only things he cared about. Those are the things that are important now. Those are the things that I see are really the most important things about spiritual practice, taking care of your life and doing your meditation. All the other mystifanatical nonsense is really just distracting. I also had a therapist. My therapist is a recognized Sufi sheikh, and so he was instrumental in helping me to kind of come to a point where I could frame the whole thing. And so I would consider him a guru, but I haven't taken initiation from him, which is the formal act of aligning yourself with a spiritual teacher. He was more of a, I would call him my self-inquiry guru, because it was really all about dissecting Jody the person and kind of, you know, getting to the underlying basis of that.
Does having a guru mean giving yourself up to the guru, giving up your...
To a lot of people it does, but to me it never did. And like I said, my guru was only interested in the very basic components of my life and would not discuss philosophy with me. He wouldn't, you know, go where I wanted to go. So in a way, it was very frustrating, my relationship with my guru. Now I'm kind of over that. I don't need to do those things. So our relationship is a little bit, you know, more on a friendly basis. But I think for many people, in my opinion, most people come to spirituality because they don't like themselves. For whatever reason, they were picked on at school, their mom didn't give them the boob, I don't know. But they're looking for self-acceptance. They're looking for positive mirroring. They're looking for a mommy or a daddy. I call them a space mommy or a space daddy. They want a person in their lives that's going to make everything okay miraculously. And so
we want somebody who knows, and we want somebody who can tell us what to do.
Exactly. Basically, they're looking for, you know, alternative parenting. And so those people want to totally give themselves to a guru, because then they don't have to be responsible for anything anymore. And there are plenty of gurus that will allow you to do that along with your checks. You know, you can give yourself to them, and they also want your money and they want your devotion. You know, they kind of feed off of that. They feed off of being God for people. And those are the ones that piss me off the most.
So you're not a cynic, and you actually are a spiritual person who talks in the similar language to followers of gurus, but your site actually appeals to cynics at the same time.
Right.
You must hear from largely from people who are very skeptical about the
godless
atheists and so forth.
No, I don't. I don't.
Really?
I get lots of people that are kind of on the same page. They got to a point where they could frame the whole thing, and they see that a lot of it's bullshit, and and they just haven't really found a place where that's been expressed yet. And so they come to my blog, and they're pretty excited about it. And I've got some really great people that comment on the blog, people that I would consider knowledgeable as any guru out there. And they come in, you know, some of them are just there to make jokes, but still they have an underlying legitimate sensibility about it. You know, then I've got the people that hate me because I've dissed their guru, who they think is God. You know, I'm basically shitting on their space mommy or space daddy. And there's a number
of... you must get some serious hostility, like threatening letters and stuff like that.
There haven't been any death threats yet, but I have...
You haven't attacked Scientology yet.
No, and I won't, because
it's not fitting into your...
there's nobody in Scientology.
There are no gurus.
Yeah, there's nobody in Scientology that claims to be God. Apparently, you get godlike powers. I don't believe that, but nobody is saying, I am more God than you.
I am
you
the realized one.
Right, right. So, but there are websites dedicated to attacking me.
Right.
That was hard to deal with at first, because I want to be liked too. Right. And that's the reason I got into it. You know,
you're being heard if you're being attacked.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. I just ignore it now. And then if people write stupid attacking comments that aren't funny, I don't publish them. If somebody wants to attack me and they're funny and it's snarky in a way that I'm entertained by, then I'll publish that.
Right. So if it's an intelligent comment, you'll put it up.
You know, they can call me an asshole. I am an asshole, but... But, you know, there's got to be something funny and entertaining about it. If they're just, you know, there's a lot of dross out there that I just leave off.
Now, from my experience, I probably hang out in about half a dozen different social circles, one of them being people who tend towards the New Age kind of thing. From my experience, people stopped following gurus around the mid-1980s. I mean, in terms of people who I know who... tend to drive me nuts because they believe in everything, you know, from the 9/11 conspiracy theory to, you know, there's some guy in Tibet who's lived off his own urine for 900 years or whatever, UFOs, psychic, everything. I believe everything, you know, but they don't seem to follow leaders like people did in the 70s and the 80s.
I don't really have any explanation for that.
I mean, do you think that, would you contradict that? Do you think that there's, I know people who I'm thinking of tend to quote Rajneesh once in a while. That's about as far as it goes, as far as gurus are concerned.
In the 80s, in the early 80s, that's when I began to get interested in Hindu-based spirituality. And I joined a yoga center in Southern California. I lived in their ashram for a year. I rejected their guru and kind of left, and then I got interested in Ken Wilber and the spectrum of consciousness and transpersonal psychology, which is what got me to the Bay Area in the late 80s, and then that's where I met my guru up here. But you know, I didn't have that experience, because my friends during the 80s were surfers in Southern California that had no interest in spirituality at all, or they were born again Christians. So at the time I got into Vedic-based spirituality, none of my friends were into it. I didn't have a community other than the people at this yoga center. But they were so bought into this guru being God that I couldn't really talk to them. When I started trying to frame what was happening at this particular yoga center, that's when I got spit out.
So let's move on to gurus specifically, since that's quite a bit of what you cover in Guru Feel Like. Anyway, what gurus would you say have been running the most egregious scams?
Right. Before I start dissing people's gods, I should say that bad gurus can work great for sincere devotees. And I say that a lot, and I think that's really, really important, that a divine guru is functioning as... an icon, a representative of what people believe God is. Authentic spiritual experience manifests internally by way of these views and beliefs and faith that we have. So if somebody really believes Sai Baba is God in a sincere, deeply felt way, then yeah, Sai Baba works as God for them. And they can have miraculous experiences in the context of a Sai Baba satsang, and they can be successful in their spiritual practice as a result of following Sai Baba.
What does that get for them, and what does it get for the rest of us, for the world? Does it give them some good energy?
I think it produces people that are less likely to club you over the head with a metal bar. It produces people that are more compassionate, and it produces people that I think that's the primary benefit, is maybe these people are more compassionate because they come to, you know, deeper spiritual understanding as a result of the fact that they truly, sincerely believe in a flim-flammer.
Right.
Because
when they get to the point where they start to get into cult-like behavior, like, for instance, the Rajneeshis, who were one of the first groups to use biological warfare,
right,
famously in Oregon.
I don't know that much about Osho, but what I do know is that he hired a crazy lady, a borderline psychotic, to run his ashram, and I think that's
who hasn't done that,
right? I think that's where it went bad. Osho himself was a real iconoclastic guru. Again, I'm not an expert in Osho, and you know, everyone points to the Rolls Royces and go, "Look at this guy; he was all about the money for him." I don't necessarily believe that.
Doesn't bug me. Rolls Royce doesn't bug me.
Yeah, I think maybe it was just about him kind of trying to smash every idea that people had about gurudom. And personally, I think that's a wonderful thing. But, you know, he was a human being. He wasn't God. He was a human being like the rest of us. He had drug problems, and there was crazy stuff going on down there. They had guns, whatever. The crazy woman poisoned those people at the salad bar. But I think Osho's
teachings...
They
did have nice purple outfits.
Right, and they had the orange stuff, too.
Were they orange? I thought they were purple.
You know, I'd heard they had rooms where everyone was on drugs having sex, but when AIDS became prevalent, they were wearing rubber gloves and weird kind of anti-AIDS outfits.
See, at the Mondo, we skipped the rubber gloves and the outfits and just kept on trucking. But
Mondo was old school. I mean, that was the original sort of... That was the foundation of a lot in the Bay Area.
But you've been pretty obsessed lately with a guru called Sri Ravi Shankar. Not the same Ravi Shankar.
Not the musician. You would think he would change his name so that he wasn't confused with the musician. Sri Ravi Shankar was a devotee of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. He was part of his movement. And I guess he was a little too ambitious to stay under the umbrella of the Maharishi, so he left to do his own thing. And he's slowly built himself up to the point where he's about to emerge as a worldwide famous guru. He's got a tremendous NGO organization called The Art of Living that has branches everywhere. They're involved in all kinds of charity activities. I can't say that Sri Ravi Shankar as an organization isn't doing good in the world. I can say that Sri Ravi Shankar isn't any more God than my dog. And that people believing that Sri Ravi Shankar is God creates what I call occluding ideas about realization. And that's my big bugaboo. Mm-hmm. That if you believe somebody else is God, you're denying your own divinity, really. And right, what Vedanta says is we're all God equally.
But you go into him quite a bit. I mean, there are some things about his behavior or about his philosophy or about his group that you feel
I have
need to be exposed.
I have informants that were close to Sri Ravi Shankar early in his, kind of formative stages, who know him to be a creepy little man that gets pissed off at people for not believing in him, for not following what he says. His organization broke no dissent. These people have seen him as an ambitious little man that started out with the goal of becoming famous.
Now, being a guru has got to be a sweet deal. I mean, that's got to be a great gig.
It's a sweet gig. I mean, you get whatever you want. People wait on you hand and foot. People are fighting between themselves to get close to you. They're crawling over one another. They'll do whatever you ask. If you want sex, it's no problem. That'll get you in trouble, but it's still really easy to get.
Damn, I should have tried
that. I know, it is a sweet gig, and yeah. I think you could pull it off too, are you?
I have a hard time really taking myself that seriously, but that could be part of
Right, well, that's kind of like adi-da in a way.
Adi-da, yeah, I kind of dig la-di-da.
You know, I think I would really dig hanging out with adi-da if he kind of came to Earth, or if he would admit that, yeah, no, I'm just some fool that had this thing going on, and maybe I got caught up in it.
Right.
Because I just wrote about that, actually. He made a speech in 1983. Or it wasn't a speech. He was talking to some devotees, and they recorded what he said. He said, "Mark my words. I am the world teacher. And at a certain point, everyone is going to follow me as God." I'm paraphrasing kind of and right. extrapolating.
Did he say when? 2012?
No, it wasn't related to the 2012 bullshit, but it basically, it should have happened by now. And it hasn't. Adi-da, I mean, I believe Adi-da is a self-realized person. He understands, you know, those fundamental spiritual truths in an experiential way, not in a speculative intellectual way. But he's also has a narcissistic character disorder. You know, he got caught up in it. He got inflated by it. And so suddenly, I am the world teacher. It's like, no, you're just somebody who knows who they really are, that, you know, has some psychological hindrances that's got you thinking that. He seems, like I said, you know, just to hang out with him one-on-one.
I guess I'm a little skeptical about whether there's really anything to teach, but then you believe in enlightenment.
You can't teach it, though. See, it's not anything that can be taught, because you really can't speak about it. If you start trying to describe self-realization or enlightenment, it's like you're pooping on diamonds. It's not possible. It is completely outside the realm of intellectual discourse or emotional experience. It is not a thought, feeling, or sensation of any kind, but it is a special kind of knowledge, a special kind of understanding that can exist in the context of a person's life. And so it gets garbled and scrambled as soon as somebody opens up their mouth. That's why it really can't be taught. But what you can teach is the idea that you need to, like, focus your mind a little bit. You need to kind of get your mind on a groove, and not on a groove thinking about this or thinking about that, on just a groove, on just a kind of entrainment, and to bring a little bit of discipline to the mind. And, you know, be a good person. Don't fuck with other people. You know, live the golden rule. Those are the things you can do. But the actual moment of self-realization doesn't happen because a guru gives you some kind of energy by touching your forehead, although there are cases when apparently that's occurred. Again, I think it's more coincidental than causative. But I do honestly believe that there is something called jnana, which is this special kind of knowledge that people can access in their lives, and that I believe I know people that I've met online that live in that place that, you know, I refer to, and I can send them an email and say, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And they'll, you know, come back to me.
Well, given that you mentioned a groove, this would be a good place to stop and listen to a tune. And we'll be right back with Jody Radzik.
Ego is a too much thing. Ego is a too much thing. It'll make you fool yourself. You'll think you're somebody else, and all the trouble it brings. It'll make you jump on up and fight. You can't stand not to be right. It'll make you lie, make you cheat, so you won't be beat. It'll make you get on out of sight. You get afraid, you're gonna act like a clown, and you're mad when somebody puts you down. Your heart's pumping and you're paranoid, you're jumping, your ego is a too much thing. When things seem going fine, the ego puts itself in a bind. The certainty turns to doubt, and you start flipping out, and then you ease on out of your mind. Out of your mind is where it's at. Help you. They tell you when you're young.
the other way. I do what you say. I love you all the way. I do what you say. 'Cause I love you all the way.
We're back with Jody Radzik and our co-host, John Shirley, who just magically appeared.
All right. Well, thanks, Aryu. I was really interested listening to your guest. You know, especially when we were talking, he was talking about the possibility of transferring energy from a guru to a student I think it's possible too, but I think there's a big misunderstanding, division, a forking in following a path, and one of the places that it forks is when you come to a guru who has some ability to transfer energy, shakti or whatever. It creates the illusion that he is an enlightened being or a realized person. And in fact, it's actually just a kind of elevated mechanical process. It's all based on materiality ultimately. And from on the path I follow and from my point of view, it's all a kind of materiality, and some people can get access to certain kinds of refined energies, but it doesn't actually indicate that they've achieved very much in terms of inner work.
I totally agree on that, but I should correct you, because Shaktipat is this idea that a guru can give you this energy, and that energy initiates kundalini emergence or this energy can make you enlightened. I don't necessarily believe that there's any energy at all. Mm-hmm. In my view, it's all a placebo effect, really.
Often it is.
It's
most of the time it's placebo effect. Right. I think there may be some cases where people can transfer something. I think Adi Da, who used to be Franklin Jones, I believe,
right.
Baba Free John, Da Love, whenever he sort of goes out of currency, he gives himself a new name.
Now he's an artist.
The artist formerly known as Bubba Free John.
Right, right.
And he's collaborating with Prince, and he may have had the ability to do that to some extent at a certain point, because he did learn some things. You do have to learn some things to be able to do that, but it creates a sense that you are almost at one with God or synonymous with God.
Are we saying that they're dealing with materiality, but a materiality that is not just stirring up
subtle reality,
neurochemicals?
It's a subtle reality. It is. Well, I think it probably does affect your neurology. I think it probably does.
But I would suspect maybe that's all that's happening. But is there something?
Yeah. It's difficult to prove otherwise. My opinion is that most of the time it's suggestion. And we see this in churches where, there are people in the Pentecostal movement, and there's a laying on of hands, and they touch their foreheads, and the people go into an ecstasy.
Sure.
Probably that indicates a kind of like front loading psychologically,
right.
and then triggers a release of endorphins. And I think that happens a lot.
That can be an authentic spiritual experience for those people in their subjective envelope. That's one of the things that I think is so important to note, that subjectively, anything can be a spiritual experience, and your subjective experience can be triggered by all sorts of stuff, not choirs of angels in heaven. It could be walking down the street and seeing a particular configuration of color and shape.
Well, Castaneda through Don Juan suggested that you find your enlightenment through the person that you perceive as your challenger or your enemy.
Yeah, I think the good gurus, they tell you when you're full of shit. They don't let you think that they're God. They basically point you at your own ignorance until you recognize it and drop it. One of the ways I would define a good guru. It's not about them. It's about you.
Is this a function in some way of your website to point people away from the guru who believes that they're God? And let me ask you, it's an amusing website, so let me stay with the amusement aspect of this a little bit. What is the wackiest belief system that you would identify with the guru?
Well, the Heaven's Gate.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm just using that as an example because that was just in the news. It was 10 years since those guys killed themselves.
Come back.
There was one guy interviewed by the LA Weekly that still believes all that nonsense. Mm-hmm. And they actually allowed him. They published his manifesto. They published his manifesto, and it is just such a load of malarkey. Unbelievable. The LA Weekly.
LA Weekly. Oh.
Because they interviewed
him. So you can get into the Weekly without blowing people up.
I am constantly amazed at how willing people are to believe the nuttiest crap about gurus, about spirituality. One of the things that really annoys me are the theosophists, Cher International, Benjamin Cream, the Maitreya, the Ascended Masters who are controlling evolution on the planet. They're doing a shitty job, but of course they make excuses for that, and they say, oh, in 2012 it's all going to change. Kalki Bhagavan, who has started a scam called Diksha. It's a spiritual pyramid scam. Diksha is a Sanskrit term which denotes this transfer of energy. Now, I take it to be just getting your mantra, and it's a kind of ceremony that allows you to become part of the lineage that your guru is a member of, and then his guru and his guru and his guru until you get to the guy that was the original founder of that lineage. That's what Diksha is, in my opinion. What Kalki Bhagavan has done is proclaimed himself to be the Kalki Avatar, which is the reincarnation of Vishnu that comes at the end of the world to set everything straight. What he's doing is charging people $5,000 to go to a 21-day retreat in India where they indoctrinate you into his bullshit, and then you are now empowered. You have licensed Diksha from Kalki Bhagavan. So you come to the States, and then you start charging to give Diksha, and apparently you've got to kick a certain amount back to Kalki Bhagavan, but it's just ridiculous.
That's the first thing Krishna would do if he were to incarnate and somebody asked for $5,000. That would be his first move, right?
Start a franchise.
Kalki Basha and donuts.
Or doll. It's very, very annoying because they're talking about it as enlightenment. They call it oneness enlightenment, that they're giving enlightenment.
Is this the oneness movement?
This is the oneness movement.
I wrote about that.
Kalki Bhagavan, it's actually him and his wife together, so they're referred to as Amma Bhagavan. Now, she's ripped off Amichi's name, basically. Amma means mother in southern Indian languages, I guess. But
now, this person you're talking about that you just mentioned, she's the one who hugs everybody?
Right, that's Amichi.
You want to explain who that is?
Okay, personally, I kind of like Amichi in a way. I've been to a couple of her satsangs.
She hugs everybody. You
right.
don't like her.
That's tremendously difficult. What she does is she puts a lot out to do that hugging. But the wonderful experiences people are having as a result of getting hugged are just activation of the placebo effect, in my opinion.
Probably.
That she's just a cute round Indian lady that maybe truly sincerely loves everyone as manifestations of God, and she's sincere in her hugging, but the actual wonderful spiritual experiences that occur are placebo effect activation. I've gotten hugged by Amichi twice, and the second time She was jabbering her way in her native language to some friends of hers in India, and she wasn't present for me at all. I mean, it was just kind of assembly line. Cha-ching, next person. Cha-ching, next person.
Get my agent on the phone.
Right. And the woman in front of me...
Now I got to go out and hug a bunch of people.
Did you pay for that experience?
No. And that's one of the cool things about Amici is it's free. They're not going to charge you. Nobody was hitting me up for any money. And that gets huge points for me.
Yeah.
And Amici teaches a very traditional kind of presentation of bhakti yoga, generally, you know, straight Hinduism. She's superstitious. There's a lot of this bullshit superstition that really annoys me. But generally, I tell people, of all the big-time gurus that you could go to in the world, she's the best one. Nonetheless, she is still this factory spewing clouds of occluding nonsense about self-realization, because people think self-realization turns...
When you say that, you mean this is what she says and what she writes, or people around her, what they say?
It's how people interpret what she says and what she writes. So it's how people view her. People view her as the example of enlightenment. So they come to think, when I get enlightened, I'm going to be this Shakti spewing god or goddess, able to give people spiritual experiences by hugging them or looking at them or touching their forehead. None of that has anything to do with self-realization, according to Vedanta. It's just all this superfluous nonsense that goes along with spiritual culture. Now,
well, people want that instant thing in
right,
America.
That's why they're coming to her, you know, and so she's kind of working it. She'll say, we're all God. You know, that I'm no more God than you or anyone else. Meanwhile, her swamis are like pumping the crowd up before she comes out saying, Amma is God, miracles will happen. And then when she's on stage, they'll do an arati, which is basically a ceremony that you do to a god or goddess in India. They treat her as if she is God. So
there must be some avenue for her to obtain donations.
Oh, yeah. No, she gets huge donations, but... She actually spent a lot of money on tsunami relief, at least according to her organization. It was her propaganda.
People often say these things, and then you find out right. They don't. The Hare Krishnas claimed to be collecting money for all kinds of things. Starving children in South America, it never went to them.
I'd be more inclined to believe Amici than I would the Hare Krishnas, but I haven't done a personal accounting, so I really
tasty
don't know.
Food, though, the Hare Krishnas.
I would believe Tony Soprano before the Hare Krishnas.
Okay, well, that's acceptable, you know, acceptable way of approaching
He's
it.
He's my guru, but you mentioned this guy, Sri Sri Ravi Shankar.
I got some oneness for you over here.
Right in the kisser.
An offer you can't understand. This guy, Shankar, he was a follower of Maharishi, made famous by the Beatles, of course.
TM. He was made more famous by TM.
Well, the Transcendental Maharishi. Meditation. What's up with him anyway?
He's a nutcase. I mean, I think he's senile.
He must be old now, right?
He's really old. He's living in Amsterdam or somewhere in Holland. And,
oh, cool. I can see him in about a week.
He's
John Sinclair. Well,
you couldn't get close to him at all. I mean, really, but I don't know. Maybe you could. Maybe, you know, you could kind of argue your way in there and you know, get right up next to him and interview him. But he's totally grandiose. He came up with this thing called the Age of Enlightenment, where he honestly believed that his organization was going to replace all the governments in the world.
They have their own political party.
I do remember
right.
They have the Natural Law Party.
Natural
That's them.
Law.
And they have the Global Country for World Peace, where they've actually appointed a king of the world, and they've appointed these rajas who basically are the heads of this kind of shadow government they have called the Global Country for World Peace. They're building a capital of the United States component of the Global Country for World Peace somewhere in Kansas, because it's the geographical center of the world. He's really obsessed with...
If people meditated using his way, like a minute a day, all the problems would be solved, I think.
Right, right. Oh, well, there's the Maharishi effect, which is if you get enough people doing TM meditation... Yeah, that is such bullshit.
I call that
ass bouncing.
It's hard to... Yeah, they cannot...
They're just bouncing on foam. There's nothing floating about it.
Yeah, they cannot levitate. It's really a joke.
Yeah.
It's really silly to watch the films and to see them bouncing. And it's just...
And to call it levitation.
It's kind of a... It's a sort of little... class or a little tutorial in self-deception and how people can deceive themselves, because the people doing the bouncing really probably believe they're levitating. You know, there was a centimeter there. I felt it.
Right.
You know,
right.
It was...
Well, it's a split second.
It's a really strenuous activity, just like going jogging. You've got endorphins going.
You could get an endorphin feeling.
So it'll create an altered state. The mistake they make is associating that altered state with some kind of special spiritual state when it's not. It's just the same thing you would get from jogging up the hill a couple times, running up and down the stairs in your house.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of these guys have followers too, who are sometimes more the problem than the guru, and you don't find out till later. I think it happened with Osho, who probably meant well and then got lost. A lot of gurus started out well and were on a good path and then were seduced by their own narcissism.
Absolutely.
And Osho, Adida, these guys were seduced by their own narcissism.
Right.
And they lost what they had, in my opinion. I think right now it's a waste of time to follow Adida.
Absolutely.
And at one time he was really very insightful, and Alan Watts was impressed by him. Not anymore. I don't think he would be.
And Ken Wilber, who I was really impressed with. Ken Wilber was... You know, I was really energized when I was exposed to Ken Wilber's writing, but...
Well, it seems like once you form an organization or a business, you're going to have some politics, and that your like right-hand and left-hand men and women are going to be like, you know...
Especially if you're regarded as divine. It creates a kind of social warp field around you. It like bends social gravity, and people start doing all kinds of crazy...
I wonder if this is happening with Steve Jobs.
Probably in a way, you know, in a slight way. People that I know that work at Apple have told me, you don't want to meet Steve Jobs in the elevator because he'll start grilling you. And if you give him a wrong answer, you're out.
You know, a lot of people are sort of feed and graze on the New Age movement. I think these oneness people are doing it. And they're very sheep-like, a lot of New Age people. There are serious spiritual seekers, and then there are the New Age people. And I've got a quote here from Huston Smith. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but you know who I mean.
Yeah,
Houston, yeah.
I've always said Houston, but then I thought, is it? I don't know. But he's talking about the New Age people. He said, I think one needs to distinguish between belief and credulity. How deep does New Age go? Has it come to terms with radical evil? And more, I am not sure how much social conscience there is in New Age thinking. If we think, for example, that we are drawing closer to transcendence or God, but are not drawing closer in compassion and concern for our fellow human beings, you know, in our actions, we're just fooling ourselves. Do New Age groups produce a Mother Teresa or a Dalai Lama? Not that I can see. So at its worst, it can be a kind of private escapism to titillate oneself.
The Secret.
Yeah, I think that's
The Secret is a perfect example.
You did want to come around. Let's end with The Secret.
And now, what The Secret has in common with oneness, a lot of things in oneness, this idea that anything can be achieved through visualization, right. And also greed. Greed is the uniting factor in a lot of these.
Well, for people who don't know, and I've vaguely sort of heard people talking about this, say a little bit about what it is.
Well, I don't really...
What's The Secret? You haven't followed it either.
Well, this is... I haven't followed it at all. I've just been exposed to it now because, you know, people are coming at me with, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Yeah. To me, The Secret is just another New Age flim-flam. It's another get-rich-quick scheme. It's you create your own reality. That's what The Secret is. Now, they throw quantum bullshit in there. Not that quantum theory is bullshit, but associating quantum theory with The Secret, that is bullshit.
Right.
It kind of relies on this idea of oneness, which is really, that comes from Vedanta. Vedanta says all is one. And I believe that all is one. But the oneness has nothing to do with the cacophony in any of its specificity. So, everything is one as the one. The oneness isn't the collection of objects in the universe. It's a oneness apart from and underlying the collection of objects that is the universe. So The Secret is in my interpretation, based on this idea that, no, we're all one. So everything is one. And I'm God, and everything is me. So I can somehow magically affect objects and phenomena and bank account, my bank account.
Right, it's a ludicrous simplification of spiritual ideas.
Right, it's a bastardization of Vedanta.
Bastardization.
It's a woeful misinterpretation.
And also,
of Vedanta.
I mean, isn't it reprehensible that the idea that people are responsible for their own reality? You know, it's like how a billion people living on a dollar a day.
It blames you for getting cancer. Basically, if you get cancer, it's your fault. You weren't thinking the right thoughts, and that's borders
primitive
on criminal.
Thinking.
It's borders
primitive,
on criminal.
Yeah, it is, because that then there are people who may not get treatment because they read that,
right.
And so they delay treatment and they die because of it.
And it also builds in an excuse for the people that you flim-flammed that are coming back to you saying, hey, I was flim-flammed, because all you need to say is, well, no, it's your fault because you weren't believing hard enough.
Right.
And it just automatically kind of excuses you from actually being a con person.
Well, before I let you go, tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Guruphiliac. Are you going to keep it going? And do we have anything that we should expect? And how can people find you?
No, you know, I love writing the blog.
You just go day to day, huh?
I love writing the blog. I really enjoy it. I've got some great people commenting on the blog. I feel kind of proud in a way that these people read me. I feel really kind of, you know, grateful that they're there and they're checking it out. I'd love to write some articles for magazines. If anyone out there is an editor of a magazine and wants an article that's a kind of critique of spirituality, I'm available to do it, and I'm cheap, you know.
The guy to do it, too, I would think. You seem to know your stuff.
The site is very well done. That's guruphiliac.com, and we'll also have a link for it on
Guruphiliac. Oh, it is .com and .org, both.
And we'll have a link for that also on areyouseriousradio.com. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, are you?
Love is the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?